Welcome to I Want to Put a Baby in You, a podcast exploring reproductive technology and life-changing stories. Here are your hosts, Jennifer White and Ellen Trackman.
Welcome to the podcast, or welcome back. Hopefully this is not your first time, but we are so happy to have you here. I am Ellen Trackman, here with my sister extraordinaire, Jennifer White. Hi, Jen.
Aww, hi.
I love these episodes where we get to explore what surrogacy looks like in another country. And this is a new one for us. It is about Georgia, surrogacy in Georgia, and really lovely to have someone talk all about what their experience was like going to Georgia. Before we dive in, Jen, you've been traveling international recently and just got back. Do you want to share any tidbits about your most recent adventures?
I mean, I went to Germany. You know, I
think not the same as Georgia, but yeah, it's that direction.
Definitely on the other side of the ocean, right?
Right, yeah.
But I lived there before, so I don't know, it felt kind of like, it didn't feel like foreign travel, but it did. I don't know how to explain it.
How different did it feel since when you lived there?
Definitely. I lost a lot of the language, even the basic language skills that I had, but it was really fascinating to feel like the words starting to come, they were bubbling back. Like if I'd been there long enough, I would have definitely been okay. I definitely also though was every time I'm just do you speak English? You know, speaking English, you know, very quick and easy to start with. I did get through one transaction totally in German. So,
Congrats.
Literally though, name of item, how many you want, throw money at
them
and run.
Please. Yeah.
And we went by our old houses where we lived, which was really
nice.
So, aww. Definitely not the same though as going and having a baby in a new country.
Yeah, let's hear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's listen. Welcome to the podcast. We are here this week with Rachel Wilson. And I have to say, this is a fun story for me to start, because even though it wasn't my story all the way through, Rachel and I met, I don't even know how many years ago now, because
it was 2020, I think.
2020. Okay. So a number of years ago now. And because she called because she wanted to do a consultation about surrogacy. And that's where we started. So Rachel, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of that and what brought you there to that point? Mm-hmm. And of course, where it intersects and kind of, that just seems like a really good starting place.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, both of you. And thanks for this podcast and just all of the work that you're doing to support surrogacy resources in the world. So my husband and I got married in 2016, and we wanted to have children. We're both, it's second marriages for both of us, and we both had children from a previous marriage. But we wanted to start again, and we were unsuccessful. We were in our mid-40s, and perimenopause was upon me, even though I didn't know. I just had no clue that that could be starting at such an early age. Side note, there's so little information, I feel like, for women around perimenopause and menopause. But anyway, so
I will say, Rachel, laughably, Jen and I were doing an introduction the other day about what tech we were excited about. And I was like, menopause technology, advances. And I don't know how many people appreciated that. But I was like, yes, this is an area that needs more information and more research.
We were very excited about that.
Yes. Anyway, so we appreciate that.
Great. Yeah, so after a year of misery and, disappointment every month, including my hormones being insane, I was like, I can't try this anymore. I'm going to go crazy if we keep trying. So I did all of the grief work of letting it go and, ceremony and surrender, and just had to really just let it go and move on. And then in 2020, my father-in-law passed away of esophageal cancer, and my husband came into some inheritance, and surrogacy had been on his radar for years and years and totally not on my radar at all. Like, I was really shut down to it. I was like, why would I want to raise somebody else's child? I just had all of these misconceptions and preconceptions against it. But then when this possibility arose for us, he brought it up again. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, I've already been through so much and I've already let go of that. But little by little, that like little seed started to grow around like, maybe this is a chance for us. And so we started doing a little research and probably just Googled, you know, surrogacy agency or something. And Jennifer, you came up.
I was gonna say, I must have popped up, huh?
Yep, you must have popped up. And
good job marketing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And we contacted you and you were super available and helpful. And we set up a call and you asked me all these questions that I had no idea the answers to. Like, do you have embryos yet? And we're like, no. Do you have an egg donor
what
yet?
What is that? Yeah.
No. And each question you asked, I realized like we are so clueless and so far behind being able to move forward with this. But it was really helpful because it gave us clues about what we needed to start learning about and exploring.
I say, so it is not intuitive, right? Like, this is not something people are born knowing how to do.
No. Oh my gosh. And there's so little information. And so, yeah, I was clueless. So that really started us on this journey of a lot of digging in to figure out how do we move forward with this. On top of that, it was 2020, so COVID, so that complicated matters. Should I just keep going with the story, or do
I was gonna say, and
what happened?
You have some like some really fun kind of, not necessarily fun, but some interesting twists and turns, and you know, kind of how life came together for you.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the twists was this question of, well, who's going to be the egg donor? Because like I said, I was in my mid-40s. And I think, yeah, the information that we discovered was that egg retrieval for me wasn't going to work out, especially since I was deeply into perimenopause. So we were like, okay, what next? I actually had a friend who had donated eggs to her sister. So that gave us this idea. I have two half sisters who are 14 and 16 years younger than me. And just by chance that autumn, so I think you and I spoke maybe in August and like October, my middle sister just reached out to me out of the blue. We were not in hardly any contact and she wanted to reconnect. And so we started these beautiful Zoom conversations and getting to know each other better, and as adults, because we had really only seen very much of each other when they were little, like 7 and 9, which is when our father passed away. So she kind of like just hopped into my life just out of the blue. And we, so my husband and I were like, oh, you know, sister, younger, egg donor, you know, I'd be able to be related to the child. This would be right. My father's grandchild, you know, it just seemed like this really beautiful idea. And so on New Year's Eve of 2020, we had a Zoom and we proposed this idea. And my middle sister, Vanessa, said yes, like right there.
I mean, that's got to be nerve-wracking. How did you approach it?
It was. It was really, you know, first of all, this is like a new relationship. Like, I didn't want her to feel like we were just after her for her eggs, you know, like it was delicate. And I don't think we like directly asked, we really just presented this whole idea. We're exploring surrogacy. We need an egg donor, .. Anybody want to volunteer?
Right.
And yeah. And Vanessa was like, oh, I would do that. So
and did she have children of her own?
No, she's not married, didn't have children of her own. She did have some health conditions that became that came to the surface after that, because we started seriously talking about it. And of course, then you have to get into like, oh,
yeah, everything. Yeah.
Everything. Like, it's not a, you have to go deep with, who is your egg donor going to be, even though she was my sister. So we had to start, you know, having those difficult conversations. And it turns out, she had some issues. So we actually invited her to come live with us. She was in Massachusetts. We live in Colorado. Oh, wow. Yeah, my husband actually suggested, why don't we invite Vanessa out here and we can get to know her better and we can kind of help her through her health concerns and just see where that leads. So she came out in April of 2021. And we just spent the summer getting to know her. And she, is in recovering from her health concerns. And in the fall of 2021, we went to the fertility clinic here where my husband had, gotten his workup and made sure that he's good to go in terms of his part. And so she went and she got checked out and we found out that she was not a good candidate for egg
donation. Oh no.
And it was so heartbreaking and felt like such a backslide. Like we had basically, spent 9 months on this project of my sister being our egg donor. And so that was really disappointing. And this happened many times throughout our journey. Like we had a big setback and I would get into this place of like, okay, it's a sign from the universe. It's not meant to happen. I have to let it go. This was a mistake to look into this and get my hopes up again and get on this roller coaster again when I'd already said I'm off the roller coaster. But then something would happen or my husband would just like stay steady with it and just, say, I think let's try plan B and then C and then D and then E.
And what was plan B after?
So after that, so we had connected with a agency in the country of Georgia. And the backstory to that is, my husband has always been interested in the country of Georgia and I had never even heard of it before, but somewhere along the way, he discovered that Georgia has an institutionalized and legalized surrogacy. So he really wanted to start looking into
Georgia. Had he been there?
Nope, never been there. Mm-hmm. And just, it was just one of those weird coincidences, like, that he'd always wanted to go. And then suddenly we want to do surrogacy and they do surrogacy. So that seemed like a little path lighting up to Georgia. So I did a little Google searching on surrogacy agencies in Georgia and this one popped out at me. I liked the name and I liked that it was run by women. And so we had been in touch with them all throughout this journey with my sister. There were complications there because my husband and I weren't legally married and the country of Georgia is an Orthodox Christian country. And so they will not do surrogacy with, unmarried couples or same-sex couples.
Did that change your calculation on getting married?
They found kind of a loophole for us, which is to prove that we had been together, like basically we were common law married. Which we had been. We had been together since 2011. So at that point, it was 10 years. So they needed like, I don't know how many years of bank records, bank statements of our joint bank account that like went back. I remember I like printed out like 30 pages and we had to get it notarized, apostilled and all of like jumping through all these hoops, these things that I had.
And other legal terms that you didn't know you'd need to learn about.
I'm like, what the heck is that? And how do you do it? And, So we went through that hoop and we're like, okay, so, and that took again, months and months and months of like back and forth. And, and they were connected with, egg banks.
I was going to ask that. Yeah. So how did you end up with, since you lost your ability to have the donor you had chosen originally?
Yep. My mom and I, started looking through egg donor profiles. My husband felt it was important that me and kind of my matrilineal lineage choose the egg donor because you know, normally it would have been me, but it couldn't be me. So he really wanted it to be my choice, my mom's choice. So in the fall, it was October of 2021, we started looking at egg donors and we chose our top three. And the top
were one, were the donors here or were they in Georgia?
No, they were in Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah. They were in Georgia because that was what this surrogacy agency in Georgia was connected with. And it, you know, so these donors would go to this agency's clinic and do the whole egg retrieval and everything there. Yeah.
And does that mean, I mean, there's more, I feel like a more of a push for openness in donation in the U.S. Was it understood that you might never know who that donor is? Was that part of the process?
I think we were told that it really depended on the donor, but most donors didn't really want to have a relationship or be in contact. So yeah, that was hard. But you know, we were just like, well, this is the path forward. So we're going to explore this. And the fact that like my top donor was available, that seemed like a really good omen. We have a friend who's who's an astrologer, and she did an astrology reading for us at that time. And she was like, don't start this process because we're about to do an eclipse cycle and this is a bad time to do these sorts of things. So you should wait. And so again, I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's been so much waiting already. Like my husband was really certain about that. And also he didn't want to go to Georgia in the winter. He wanted to go in the spring or the summer. So it was like more waiting and more just, sitting on our hands. And so we started making plans to go to Georgia in April of 2022. And if you recall, February of 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine. So
that little like, thing.
That felt like a huge, like, put on the brakes. Like, one, Georgia has invaded, Russia has invaded Georgia in the past and in fact still occupies some of Georgian territory. And I just had this like worst case scenario fear that Russia was going to drop a nuclear bomb on Ukraine and there would be nuclear debris floating in that part of the world while our baby was gestating. And I just was like, there's no way I'm going to do that. On top of all the other, you know, fears and worries about somebody else carrying our baby across the world, like to add in a war zone, just felt like, no, I'm not going to do that. And so again, put the brakes on, freaked out. It's like, you know, the universe does not want this to happen. And a couple of things shifted for me. One was a conversation with my mom and she said something like, oh, babies are born in war zones all the time. It's like, that's one way. It is true.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, it is unfortunately true. So that it was interesting to hear her kind of continued support of it, I guess, versus like, you know, you shouldn't do this. And so that was a little bit of a shift for me. And then some anger at Putin, like, I'm not going to let that S-head, you know, like ruin my life, ruin my plans, ruin my dreams. Like, there's no way I'm going to let him do that. So it was like this kind of like, I don't know, just anger, like gave me some energy to get through some of the fear. And then the final piece was, I was like, well, maybe if we go to Georgia, I can find a way to be of service to Ukrainian refugees. And
I love that.
I actually have Ukrainian ancestry. So there was that kind of almost like an honoring of my ancestors in addition to, you know, the children and mothers of Ukraine who were fleeing to Georgia. So I started a GoFundMe. I connected with a nonprofit called Total Courage, which seemed like an appropriate name.
Yeah.
And yeah, we raised like $5,000. And so it kind of gave me like another reason to go there that was beyond just me and my desires and wishes, but a way to do service. So those three things kind of gave me the courage to go ahead. We bought tickets and we went to Georgia in April of 2022 and had just a really beautiful experience. We were there for over 2 weeks. We wanted to explore the country. We wanted to just feel what it was like, you know, are people freaking out about the war? You know, does it feel safe? And we hadn't signed any contracts or anything. We just were going to go first and just feel.
And what was it like? Were people freaking out or was
freaking out? They were mad, and there was a lot of anti-Russia graffiti and you know, events to support Ukraine and fundraisers and that kind of thing. So there was kind of a real sense of solidarity with Ukraine. But no, people were going about their daily lives as normal. So that was very, you know, reassuring to see. And so we traveled around, we enjoyed the food, we went to, you know, so many beautiful churches and cathedrals and connected with kind of like the Mother Mary archetype and the Divine Feminine and lots of prayers and lighting candles and just like, you know, if this is meant to be, may we have a child through this. And on like the last couple of days of our time there, we went in and we signed all the paperwork.
Wow.
And at that time too, the egg donor that we had chosen was willing to come in and meet us. So we, And so we left Georgia. We went to Turkey on like a honeymoon because we had gotten married in 2016, but had never gotten on a honeymoon.
Can I ask about the donor meeting? Yeah. I'm just so curious how that was.
Well, she wouldn't let us take her picture. She was wearing a mask, like COVID mask. And she wouldn't take it down. And she didn't speak English. But other than that, she was definitely the donor. I mean, I could tell what she looked like. And she was kind of nervous and shy. But I was grateful that she was willing to come in. And, you know, it was definitely like a vulnerable thing that she was doing to meet, you know, strangers. And I could tell it was, you know, it was kind of going above and beyond, at least for that culture to come and meet us. And, you know, I'd mentioned before, it's an Orthodox Christian country, and there are many people that are not in support of egg donation and surrogacy. And so it's a little bit, even though it's not underground and it's all legal, you know, there's not, people don't like advertise or egg donors or surrogates. So I'll get to that part about our surrogate as well. So we left, we went to Turkey, we were sitting on the beach, we got a beautiful email that, you know, egg retrieval had been done, and we were just, you know, so elated and excited, and we came home to Colorado, and we got all of the emails about what was happening with the blastocysts and the day three and the day five. And then we got an email saying that none of the embryos had survived.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, I just went into that deep, dark place of like, you know, how could this be? It's so unfair. Like other people get like 12 and 15 and 20 embryos and we get zero. And so, I went down to a dark place. And again, my husband was like, I think we should try again. And I'm like, are you crazy? And our agency, this wasn't part of the contract, but they reached out and they were like, we would like to try again and we'll pay for the next donor.
But changing donors.
Yeah. Changing donors. So, okay. You know, here we go again. So my mom and I went through, we looked more donors. We chose our top three. Our top one wasn't available, but our second one was available. So we went through the whole, you know, egg retrieval cycle and everything. And on August 9th, we got the message that two Umbreas had survived.
Yay, that's two. Yay. Right. It only takes one.
Better than zero, for sure.
Right.
And the twist of fate in that one is that I had been praying for a girl. I have a son who's, you know, my flesh and blood, and I love him, of course. And I really wanted a girl to just have the different experience. Well, guess what the gender was of both of those?
Both boys, for both sure. Boys. Yeah.
Of course. So that was another shock. I remember getting the email in the middle of the night, and I didn't wake up my husband. I just was like, you've got to be kidding me. How could this be happening? But by the morning, I was like, there's no way I'm going to have gone this far and just say, never mind, because it's not the right gender.
Right.
And so picked myself up, dusted myself off, and was like, okay, we've got two embryos. That same day, August 9th, I get a text from my sister, the one that was going to be our egg donor, with a picture of a positive pregnancy test.
Oh, that's always so hard.
Well, it was like, what? You know, how can this be happening? Like, it's such a, so many weird twists and turns. So, yeah. She's pregnant. And I was, you know, it was unexpected. She's not married. It was kind of, yeah, just one of those crazy things. And but I was super excited for her. And so she's pregnant, and we are going to try to get pregnant. So yeah, just the crazy story. So let's see, that was August. September, we got an email from the agency saying, because of the war in Ukraine, all of the intended parents who had been working with agencies in Ukraine are now wanting to come to Georgia, and so the shortage of surrogates. And normally we could have guaranteed 6 to 8 weeks out from you know, those embryos being tested, getting a surrogate, but now it's indefinite. We don't know when you're going to get one. And again, like, just so disappointed, and like, oh my God, more waiting. And so that was September. And again, I just was like, okay, I have to just let it go. There's nothing I can do. We actually did consider moving our whole shipping the embryo to Mexico. And because this agency has a branch in Mexico, and we were in conversation with them about that. And we're kind of ready to maybe do that. And then we got the email, okay, we found you a surrogate. And that was like October 11th or something. So,
and can I ask, was the U.S. just kind of out of consideration because of cost, or?
Yeah, I think cost was the main thing. I think that was the main thing. And it was just like, having too many options actually is overwhelming. And so sticking with the agency who we had already gone through so much with and already paid a bunch of money to, and it just seemed like, okay, maybe the route is through Mexico. But anyway, so we got a surrogate profile, and we met with her, and we liked her. And
how did that meeting? So you had a match meeting with her then? Did she speak any English? So was it via Zoom? How did that work?
It was on WhatsApp, and it was with the surrogacy agency, you know, coordinator, did all of the interpreting. But yeah, we got to, you know, see her and hear her and just ask her questions. We asked like a million questions. I have a good friend who's a midwife. And so I asked her, like, what are all the questions I should ask? And she sent me like 30 questions. And So we moved forward with her. The one kind of hiccup there was that we had hoping to transfer both embryos, one in the hopes of just that both, you know, one of them would take, but we were also open to twins. And originally the surrogate said she was open to that. And then she contacted our coordinator and expressed her reservations. She actually had been trained as a nurse and knew that both of these embryos were really you know, high quality, and she just wasn't willing to take the risk of carrying twins. So again, at that point, it was like, okay, fine, you know, like we're not going to go try to find some other surrogate. And the doctors had also been expressing a similar thing. So we decided to just do the one. And October 29th-ish, we got confirmation of positive pregnancy. And
that was really quick at that point compared to from when you matched to get to, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, she was all ready to go. And, you know, there's some mystery there. Like maybe she was supposed to, maybe she had been matched with another family and so had been, you know, was prepared. And then they backed out. I don't know, but it did seem like very quick, like, oh my gosh.
It's interesting.
So we got to stay in touch with her every time they did an ultrasound, which was very frequent, like every 2 to 3 weeks. She would take a video of the ultrasound and send that to us. And then we would talk to her through the interpreter at the agency and just got to kind of follow step by step the whole experience, which was really precious. And her birthday is in January, and we sang her happy birthday, and there was just a nice connection. I sent her lots of music to listen to, and I would do voice memos that she would listen to, and we just had a really sweet connection.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
And how'd the pregnancy go? Was it smooth? Yeah,
it was pretty smooth. She did have a hematoma early on, which was, you know, I guess fairly normal.
But scary because bleeding, and you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was still scary, but it was okay. And so somewhere along the way, she had let us know that she had she has a daughter who was 6 at the time. Her daughter had been delivered at 37 weeks, and she told that to us and the coordinator at the same time. The coordinator was like, oh my God, that's good to know. I don't know why she didn't know that before. But she was like, you probably should get here sooner than what we had originally said.
Right.
So the baby was due July 6th or 7th. And so she was like, you should probably, you know, get here mid June. So that kind of like speeded things up a little bit. And, we booked an Airbnb for 2 months because we wanted to stay and have kind of a, you know, travel experience and not just get right back on the airplane with a newborn. And so we left on June 13th, I believe it was. We got there, on the 15th, in the morning. It was Thursday morning. And thought, you know, well, we've got time. Like, okay, we should be good. We were going to meet.
Last words, I assume.
We were going to meet her on Saturday. She was going to go in for a checkup, and we were going to get to meet her for the first time. And I was super excited. And we went to bed on Friday night, and somehow my husband had forgotten to turn his ringer off, and so we were getting to bed at like 11:30 at night, and we got this phone call, and we're like, that's weird. Like, who's calling us? You know, here we are in Georgia. And it was our coordinator. And she's like, your surrogate's in labor. If you want to be there for the birth, you need to get in a taxi right now and come to this hospital.
Oh, wow.
So I had packed the baby's bag, but I hadn't packed mine yet, thinking, we've got time. So we're like racing around the Airbnb, like, trying to put together things, and it's the middle of the night, you know, calling a taxi. It was
with a language barrier.
And the coordinator wasn't going to meet us there, and I had just never asked that question. Of all the millions of questions I had asked, I just assumed we were going to get support while we were there at this, you know, hospital. And I'm not going to be there. Okay, let me know how it goes.
Oh, wow.
So that was the lowest point of our experience of not having So anybody out there that's thinking of doing surrogacy in Georgia, ask your agency.
Ask about the amount of support. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we get to the hospital. Yeah, I know we don't have a ton of time, but yeah,
okay.
The baby was born. I was there in the room. I got to, you know, it's kind of crazy to meet our surrogate while
she's laboring.
Birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an awkward time to meet someone in person for the first time.
It is. So my husband wasn't allowed in the room per Georgian, like, cultural norms, and also the surrogate requested that.
Yeah.
So I rushed in, and oh, she was in labor, and she was sweating. I could feel her head. You know, I came up and I hugged her, and I had to, like, sign language ask for, like, a cool washcloth, and, like, they got me, like, a scratchy paper towel with a little water on it, and I just, like, held that onto her forehead and held her hand and said, "It's gonna be okay. I love you. It's gonna be okay." And, like, within minutes, our son was born.
Oh wow!
And they, you know, cut the cord, toweled him off, and brought him into another room. And I ran out of the room to chase our baby, you know, and.
Yeah.
And I never got to see the surrogate again. Like, I had to leave her.
No.
Like, I know. What? It was just very, like, heartbreaking. Like, I can't believe you just gave birth to our child, and I can't stay here with you. I can't make sure you're okay. No, I had to.
But you didn't get to come back and say thank you? Or
she chose to not see us. She was in the same hospital for 3 days, the same as we were.
Oh, again, that was her option.
Regulation. Yes, she chose. She just wanted there to be kind of a clean break. And so we did have a Georgian nanny who helped us communicate with her, you know, compose WhatsApp messages in Georgian. And so, you know, we were able to have some, you know, to do all the thanking and the appreciation and everything. But we just never got to see her, and my husband never got to meet her in person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was really sad. And I have some sadness about that, and we just had to respect that that was her wish and let it go. So yeah.
So how was the experience being in the hospital? I will admit to everybody out there, I've read you wrote a lot about this, and I've read it.
Yeah.
Talk about your experience being in the hospital in a hospital in another country with a newborn.
Well, I would not recommend it. It was very stressful, mainly because most of the nursing staff didn't speak English. So here we were with a little baby 30 minutes old, and nobody could tell us, like, is he okay? Like, what's going on? And thankfully he was, but there was just none of the, I felt like there's kind of a very, like, almost like a Soviet, like, cultural imprint, at least in, like, the institutions, like the schools and the hospitals, that is, like, very cold and
my child's expression. Yeah. When I lived in Germany, my child was hospitalized when we lived in Germany, and the nurses were not allowed to speak to us at all. It was really, it was
what? They can't talk to you?
No, they can't do any information. They can't do anything. And, like, because I kept asking them, like, aren't you a nurse? And I guess they said only doctors can give out information. So, like, once a day when the doctors would round was the only time anybody would speak to us. And that was if a doctor spoke English.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, it was not a warm, cozy, like, sort of situation. We had to press a button on the wall to call for a nurse. And they would come maybe right away, maybe 20 minutes later. So we never knew, like,
and how were you feeding your newborn? Did you bring formula with you, or did they have,
they had formula. We had to bring our own bottles. So yeah, we would, you know, he would be screaming in hunger, and we would be like,
and you'd
pushing
push the button
that call
and
button.
Be like,
and like maybe 20 minutes, they would, like, come get a bottle, go back again, maybe 20 minutes later, bring, another bottle. So yeah, that was not ideal. The food was terrible, which, you know, at first I had known people had said that. I'm like, oh, that's going to be the least of our concerns. But when you're with, when you're somewhere for 3 days and you're not sleeping, like you need nourishment, even though I wasn't breastfeeding, like you need to be fed. And so that was really hard. So our nanny ended up cooking food for us and bringing that in. So that was very helpful. So yeah, that was a hard time.
I was gonna say, but you at least you got, you jailbroke out of the hospital after a couple of days, right?
3 days. We got released after 3 days. Experience. Yeah. Yeah. So we went back to our apartment and, this nanny was amazing and wonderful. And she was, she did 3 nights for us. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday nights, we got to sleep.
Amazing with a newborn. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, huge. And then Sunday afternoon, she would come. So Ryan and I could go and, you know, go to museums and just experience some of Georgia. And yeah, we took a trip up to the Caucasus Mountains to a town called Kazbegi, which is incredible and beautiful, with Remy. That's what we ended up naming him. And yeah, we got the passport right away. I think, yeah, my
that's impressive.
I know, my appointment was like July 3rd. And they were like, normally you could come back tomorrow, but it's July 4th and we're going to take the holiday off. So come back the next day. And yeah, we got it right away. But we didn't want to leave. We wanted to stay a little longer, although I was really homesick and I actually wanted to get home. But we had the Airbnb and, you know, we had our tickets and our plans. So we came back mid-August. And yeah, then had to kind of figure out a whole new way of being, minus a nanny.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus a whole house and a dog and a cat and work and like all the things.
Right.
So that was a big adjustment to.
And, I mean, I'd love to like pivot and talk about you, because you reached back out to me a while back and you were asking really something very specific that I'm actually fascinated about. And I know I couldn't help you and I tried to send you some places and it sounds like you've hit some dead ends with it. Yeah. But you talked about wanting to donate your remaining embryo and how that was possible. Talk about what you found in that part of this journey.
Yeah. So, so yes, we had the two embryos and I, which we're paying for storage for that other one in the fertility clinic in Georgia. And every time it comes up for like, okay, we're going to renew storing the embryo, it brings up the question, well, do we have any hopes or plans for that embryo? And so this fall or winter, we really just started thinking about that more carefully. And at the time, we felt like there's no way. So my husband and I are now 50 years old. There's no way we can go through all of this again. But we don't want to just let this embryo die, you know, and be destroyed. So a friend of mine who did surrogacy in the U.S., she was like, oh, I'm part of all these Facebook groups that, you know, people are donating and adopting embryos. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Like maybe we could know the family and, you know, Remy could know his little brother. And that would be such a win-win in terms of like, we don't have to raise the child ourselves, but he gets to come into the world and we get to know him. And so as I started digging into that, I discovered that apparently the FDA has certain strict guidelines about how embryos are created. And if an embryo is not created on U.S. soil, then either zero or very few fertility clinics in the U.S. will transfer that embryo. This was information I was given. So that just put a stop to all of our hopes that the baby could be born here in the U.S. But in the process of, you know, I basically wrote an ad for the Facebook groups saying, okay, so if somebody wants this embryo, they would have to go to Georgia and undergo IVF in Georgia, or they would have to hire a surrogate, you know, sign a contract with a surrogacy agency in order to use this embryo.
Does that work in Georgia to have a donated embryo and a surrogate?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Nice. Okay.
Yep. I was very clear in that question with our fertility clinic, and she was like, yep, we can drop the paperwork and, you know, you can donate the embryo, and then that person can just go through IVF just like anybody else. So
did you find someone?
No.
Did you find a recipient?
No. Okay. So we put it out there. We wrote this ad for this embryo, which was a very strange experience. And basically I was like, you know, if we were to find like the right family, then that would be our sign from the universe that like, okay, this baby's meant to come into existence and, or at least be given a chance to. And so we'll take that route. If we don't find the right family, then we are going to consider another surrogacy journey. And we've kind of put it, as a deadline of summer solstice or Remy's birthday, to either have found a family or decide to move forward with
his upcoming birthday or a birthday that's passed.
His June birthday upcoming. Yeah, June of 2024. Oh,
so we're right now in that time period. Yes, of
we're in the window of looking for a family to donate this embryo to.
And if you don't find that family, does Georgia care that you're 50? Is there an age cutoff or is that a concern anyway?
No. Okay. That's not a concern. But then what's interesting is I was, you know, in preparing to be interviewed by you two, I was like, oh, I should go back and listen to one of their other podcasts just to like remind myself like how it is. And so I was scrolling back a little ways and I saw that Surrogacy in Uganda podcast. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting to me because I've lived in Africa before. I lived in Mali and Liberia. And so I listened to that and it just opened up this whole other possibility of, well, if we do surrogacy, like maybe we ship that embryo to Uganda and do a surrogacy there. There were certain things about the Ugandan programs that were really appealing. Including it's not in a war zone and there's not like, right? a six month long list or waiting list for a surrogate. At least as far as, you know, I haven't done any research, but just having listened to that podcast. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
We make connections everywhere.
I know. Maybe that's another twist and turn in the story. Who knows? Right? I don't know.
So we talked, I mean, just a little bit, we connected about you kind of, you're refocusing your professional life. Talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm a psychotherapist and I've mainly worked a lot with addiction. I'm in recovery myself and I wrote a book combining yoga and the 12 steps. And so that's been like a real passion of mine, but having gone through this whole journey with infertility and surrogacy and then kind of learning so much more about babies and parenting techniques, you know, things that were just not around 22 years ago, or I wasn't resourced enough to know about them. And plus now there's, you know, so many blogs and podcasts and et cetera. It's like an overwhelming amount of information. I feel like I've really learned a lot. For example, there's this beautiful form of parenting called aware parenting that my husband and I are practicing. As another example, there's elimination communication. That was, again, nothing that I had ever really thought about before. So we've picked up all of this information, and I would love to be able to share that with other mothers, either women who are trying to be pregnant or people who are considering surrogacy or egg donation, just the whole gamut of kind of what I've been through over the last several years. I feel like I'm not an expert. I haven't gone to all the conferences, but I've read a lot of books and I've like poured my heart into this, to learning how I can best take care of and raise this, you know, precious gift that the universe gave us. So I started, I've renamed my practice. It's now called Nurture Yourself, Nurture Your Child, because that's a huge piece of how can we give, you know, in such a huge way to this little being. We've got to fill our own well, and what are the ways to do that? Doing inner child work around, you know, kind of what our experience was as children and how that gets repeated or not as parents. You know, it's such a rich area to explore, and lots of opportunities for healing that I feel like I've really been able to undertake, as well as my husband. So yeah, I just really want to share that with the world and support, you know, mothers and babies. And so, yeah, so
that's amazing.
That's my new direction. Yeah.
I am so thankful that you reached out the first time, right? And then I got to be a little teeny tiny piece of at least your kind of focus of direction, right?
Yeah.
But even more thankful that you reached back around again to update and tell me how things were going. I always tell people, I'm like, I love babies, you know, whether they come through my own surrogacy agency or not. I'm like, I always love to hear everybody's successful stories. So
yeah,
oh, thank you so much. Any closing advice for people who are thinking about pursuing, especially international surrogacy?
Mm-hmm. Expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
And there's just always going to be things that you don't know and you didn't think to ask. And you're going to find out kind of after the fact when you wish you had already known before. And there's just a lot of that. But, you know, I'm so grateful that we stuck with it. And we have this gorgeous little boy who we're just so devoted to. And, you know, so I know I'm one of the very, very lucky ones. And I just wish the best to everybody out there who's pursuing this experience. And I'm happy to support people. I did write a blog explaining the whole story in much more depth, so people could reach out to me. I'm happy to share that with
them. And we can link to it in the show notes as well.
Great. Yeah. So, yeah, good luck, everybody.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much to Rachel. I love that she reached out, even we had years prior had been in contact and talking about her surrogacy journey. And she literally just reached out and was like, hey, I want to update you that we have a baby now. And I thought that was the coolest thing, that she just wanted to tell me about it. And so I was like, come on, be on the podcast. So
that's so great.
Yeah, I love it. So thank you to her. We really appreciate it.
Other things we appreciate, leaving reviews. So throw some stars on the podcast if you have a second. Leave a review. I mean, as honest as you want to be, we can take it, I think. Go ahead, be honest. Also, you can give us a call, 303-997-1903. Again, 303-997-1903. Leave a message, send us messages, let us know what you want to hear, or if you want to come on. We would love to hear from you and maybe even have you on our next episode. Also, if you love merch, we do have, if you click to the website, iwantoputababyinyou.com, there's a merch button where you can get phone covers and shirts and fanny packs and anything that your heart does, not everything, but many things that your heart may desire with the logo with a sperm wearing headphones.
Yes. Always they are fun. Awesome. And they're always a conversation starter everywhere you go.
You're always looking for that unique gift, right? That's
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you as always. And I guess we get to say a final thank you because our Melissa, who's been doing sound for us.
No. We are so thankful for all the time Melissa spent with us. And she was just such an honor and pleasure to work with. So, you know, a huge, huge thanks. We're really excited for her future and all that she does and continue to do for family building. She's amazing. So hopefully we'll have her back and tell some of her story sometime.
Exactly. But thank you to Melissa. Obviously, thank you to Tyler, to Amanda, and thank you to all of you for being here and listening to us.